The American Academy of Environmental Medicine urges doctors to prescribe non-GMO diets for all patients. They cite animal studies showing organ damage, gastrointestinal and immune system disorders, accelerating aging and infertility. The American Public Health Association and American Nurses Association are among many medical groups that condemn the use of GM bovine growth hormone because the milk from treated cows has more of the hormone insulin-like growth factor, or IGF-1, which is linked to cancer, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. On today's show, we'll learn about GMOs and their potentially harmful effects on our health. With two great experts tonight, we want to get to the bottom of the problem. We'll also teach you how to make informed purchases at your local supermarket. In the kitchen, we have a delicious recipe for you to try. You don't want to miss our show today. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Narada and I'm glad you've joined me today. Go Healthy for Good is live every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Go Healthy Live. And if you want to watch a previous episode or find our recipes, then go to our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. By mixing genes from totally unrelated species, does genetic engineering unleash a host of unpredictable side effects? Could it be that the type of genes used and the process of creating a genetically modified plant species result in collateral damage that might include new toxins, allergens, carcinogens, or nutritional deficiencies? Well, today we'll explore GMOs with our expert guests, but before we start this conversation, let me show you a quick introductory video to genetic modification. Watch.
What is a GMO? Scientists have discovered that by artificially manipulating the DNA of natural food, they can create a killer tomato. There are numerous intended purposes for modifying the genetics of food, one of which is to breed fruits and vegetables that produce their own internal insecticides. The concerns are obvious. If the food kills bugs, what does it do to us?
In Europe, where GMO foods require labeling,
the cost to consumer has increased less than 0.2%.
Cases of autism, bowel-related syndromes, and food allergies have skyrocketed.
Since GMOs were quietly introduced into our food system in the mid-1990s.
The U.S. military sprayed an herbicide known as Agent Orange over the jungles of Vietnam.
After its manufacturers declared it tested and safe.
It was later determined that numerous people, including American veterans, were killed or maimed.
And countless children were born with birth defects.
The same chemical company who manufactured Agent Orange
is currently leading the production of GMOs.
And spending millions of dollars to campaign against labeling.
It may be years before we know the long-term effects of genetically modified foods. Until then, we are simply asking for companies to label their packages and give us a choice to opt in or opt out of this science experiment. Already, over 50 countries have successfully implemented GMO labeling. The U.S. remains one of the only industrialized nations yet to get with it. While we may not have the financial backing of the corporations, what we do have is the power of the people. 93% of Democrats, 89% of Republicans, and 90% of everyone else is standing together for our right to know what's in our food.
In the studio with us today is Dr. John Kelly, board certified in preventive medicine. He's a lifestyle and preventive medicine specialist, adjunct faculty member of the Loma Linda University School of Medicine in California. Welcome, Dr. Kelly.
Good to be with you, Narada.
Now, what does, remind us again, what does GMO stand for?
Yeah, that's genetically modified organism, commonly called GMO. And what we're talking about primarily have to do with foods, things that we eat, plant. But they are modifying other things are being modified. But mostly we're talking about the foods.
Right.
Supply.
Yes, because there's modifications going on in pharmaceuticals and things like that.
Yes.
We really are not going to be talking about so much today because we're interested, as you say, in the food. So what are the advantages to, you know, to producers, what are the advantages? Is this going to cure world hunger? Is it going to make the foods more give them more nutrients? Is it going to save money, going to make it less costly for the farmer and allow him to increase his profit margin? Any advantages?
Yeah. Well, of course, I think the industry hopes that it could achieve all of those things that you said. I mean, after all, it would be nice if we could have strawberries and other fruits that were immune to freezing, so we didn't lose them in a sort of a freak freeze. If you've ever been in California, when the weather gets cold, they got all those fans blowing there, right, trying to keep the air moving. So, I mean, it's a nice idea. I love science. I mean, it appeals to me. But I think the primary reasons that we know the foods that are genetically modified now were to allow them to be immune to herbicides, so that you could spray the herbicide without worrying about hurting the crop. You could just kill the weeds and not the crops. Another is to as an insecticide, so that the plant is automatically immune to pests. Or
like
fungus.
Viruses.
Worms and other things that injure the crops. And so all of these things have the potential, at least theoretically, to improve our productivity, to help feed the world, as we say. But sometimes things aren't as simple as they first seem.
Right, because this is a very complex science, isn't it? Genetic engineering, you're talking about things smaller than the human eye can see, and you're actually manipulating
it. Yes.
How much genetic material are we talking about, and how do they actually do this?
Well, that's a really great question, because, you know, my undergraduate is in biochemistry and molecular biology, and when I was in college, we actually did some genetic engineering. I spliced the luminescence gene into some E. coli bacteria in our lab, and those bacteria glowed in the dark because the gene was turned on and working.
Wow.
But, you know, when I was doing that and many of these genetic engineering techniques were developed, the DNA, the genome, was thought to consist of two parts: the coding part and the non-coding. The junk DNA is what they actually called
the
non-coding part of the DNA. Now we know that is an absolutely essential part of the switches and the mechanism that controls gene expression.
And we've talked about that here on the show in the epigenetics topics. Right, and that was the non-coding portions.
That's right.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that some of these crops that we're going to talk about tonight were actually engineered before we understood the importance of that so-called junk DNA. And now, to answer your question, the amount of DNA that is inserted to modify the genetic or the gene makeup of a plant is relatively small. However, because of the technique that's used,
it's relatively small in relation to the size
to the entire length, right.
But you're saying...
Yeah, thank you. So the amount of DNA in the cell that's added is less than 1%, maybe less than a tenth of a percent. But the effect, the way it's done, is it's not added in a single place. We use what is sometimes called, it's more like a shotgun approach, not a rifle. So the gene is inserted in multiple places in the genome of the plant. So it's a small amount, but it's in multiple places, and it may have very different effects depending on where it happens to land.
And is the amount, are they able to control the amount, how many shots go into that DNA?
Well, yes and no. What we generally do, the techniques are getting more refined, and I'm not up to on the latest, but as a few years ago, the technique largely was we would insert using transposons, which are a certain sequence of DNA that allows it to insert itself into the long strand of DNA, sort of like budding in line, if you will. And that DNA that's put in there contains a gene that we want to be expressed by this plant.
Right.
Okay, but when we do that, we shoot it many copies, if you will, at the genome, and then we grow the resulting seeds to see which plant will grow. And the ones that don't grow, they died in the process, you might say. And so then the ones that grow, I mean, when I did this experiment with the bacteria when I was an undergraduate, we just used an antibiotic when we were able to find the ones that had the resistance, and those are the ones that had the luminescent gene, because we put the two genes together into it.
And we're able to kill off the one that you didn't want anymore.
So it's a sort of a selection process at the end.
Okay. Well, joining us today from Florida is Jeffrey Smith, a leading consumer advocate promoting healthier, non-GMO choices. He's the author of the world's best-selling, number one rated book on the health dangers of genetically modified organisms. He's also the executive director of the Institute for Responsible Technology. Welcome, Mr. Smith.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, tell us, I think of the quote that we are what we eat, and being a new technology, and we're going to be eating these foods, I'm sure that research was done before these foods were introduced into the food chain, starting with animals and moving up to human food, and that research would have been done on animals initially. What did those studies actually show?
Well, first of all, it's important to understand that according to the Food and Drug Administration, there's no required safety studies whatsoever, because the person in charge of policy at the FDA was Monsanto's former attorney. Monsanto is the big biotech company, and later Monsanto's vice president. And his policy falsely claimed that the agency wasn't aware of any information showing that GMOs were significantly different. And that was a lie, because in fact, the overwhelming consensus among the scientists working at the FDA, according to documents made public from a lawsuit, showed that they not only believed that GMOs were different, but dangerous, and could lead to, as you said earlier, allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems. The very few studies that have been done by industry are what we call tobacco science. They're rigged to avoid finding problems. Nonetheless, we are now seeing, according to the American Academy of Environmental Medicine and others, clear evidence of reproductive disorders like sterility, immune system problems, accelerated aging, organ damage, etc. And we're now starting to see evidence that this is also taking place in human beings, and that's prompting thousands of doctors to prescribe non-GMO diets.
Now, I think that do we have some images of some of those changes that we've seen in animals? And perhaps you could walk us through some of the images that you have showing what drastic changes there are, even at organ and cellular level. What have we got here?
Well, on the liver nuclei on the right, there's a clear difference in the mice that were fed genetically modified Roundup Ready soybeans. These soybeans, which constitute 93% of all soy planted in the United States, are engineered not to die when sprayed with this toxic herbicide Roundup. And if you look carefully as a scientist at this difference, you can see that the liver cells appear to be reacting as if it was a toxic insult. Now, this is just one of several studies done on livers, kidneys, and other organs showing organ damage in mice and rats that were fed genetically modified foods. Now, we don't know if it's the genetic engineering of the soybean that caused the problem, or the excess amount of herbicide residues that are found in the organs that caused the problem. But either way, the most recent study that was released, which was just this past September, showed significant organ damage as well as early death among the rats that were fed genetically modified corn, as well as massive tumors as large as 25% of body weight. Up to 80% of the female rats got these tumors, up to 50% of the male rats, and far less in the control group.
Wow, that's impressive. I'm sorry, we have to go to a break. Coming up next, we'll show you how to make a delicious muffin. Don't miss it, and we'll continue this discussion when we get back. Welcome back. Today I have Isabella in the kitchen helping me, and we're going to make Isabella's favorites. What do you love?
Corn muffins.
Corn muffins. Very good. Why don't you tell our viewers what goes into our corn muffins?
1 cup white flour, 1 cup fine cornmeal, 1 cup whole wheat flour, 2 tablespoons baking powder, 1 teaspoon salt, 1/2 cup honey, and 1.5 cup of warm water.
All right. Well, let's start with the really naughty food, the corn. That's what we're talking about today, is cornmeal. So let's put the corn in and some flour. You start mixing that for me. Very good. Some wholemeal flour. Because if we're going to use corn, we need to use GMO. Non-GMO, I should say. Non-GMO, don't we?
Yep.
And some salt. Mix that all around nicely. Very good. And I'm going to mix the honey and the water together. How's your mixing going? Good?
Yep.
Great. Now I'm going to just borrow this for 1 second just to give it a quick stir up. And on it goes. Now you mix that up nicely.
Okay.
Good girl. You help Mum in the kitchen sometimes?
Yep.
Great, I'm glad to hear it. Your little brother came on the show last week, didn't he, DeMarco?
Yep.
Does he help Mummy too?
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
But he does a really good job when he does.
Does he? Oh, great. All right, I'll show you what to do now. You go. Ooh. You know, by going around the bowl, you bring all the extra bits in. All right. Tell you what, do you want to put one of each into our holes?
Okay.
And I'll finish stirring this up and get that nicely mixed together. This is such an easy recipe. And so if you want to make your own cornbread, you know exactly the ingredients that are going to be in it if you're making your own bread. And oh, very good. Now, should we cut it into 6 pieces?
Sure.
How's that? It's kind of 6, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of.
You want to try and get them in there?
Okay.
See how you do. Doesn't have to be perfect. Because okay. When they're rising in the oven, they're going to change shape. That's great. We'll do the rest later, eh? And let's okay. Go on and see what they taste like.
Ooh, okay. They look so good.
They do, don't they? Should we try and break one open and then, you know, we could, what would you eat on your corn muffin usually?
I'm just eating plain, sometimes with milk in the morning.
Really? You just eat it plain?
Yep.
Great. Another thing people could do, they could pour a little bit of flax oil because that's got nice omega-3s. And so we could even drizzle some of that on. Ooh, there we go. You can see how dark that lovely flax oil is. It's got all those omega-3s. So you ready to taste?
Oh, I'm ready.
You're ready. There you go. You like yours plain, so I won't inflict the flax oil on you, but I love it. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
This is really good.
Mmm. You're right. That is yummy.
We gotta do this again.
Mmm. You're going to have to take the recipe home and teach Mum how to do it.
Okay.
You could do that? Great. Now let's take a look at this video. Grandma has a lot of good wisdom for all of us.
When I was raising my family, I didn't have to really think about what was in our food. Now you can find GMOs in our basic fruits and vegetables. We don't know if GMOs are safe or not. And I don't want my grandchildren, or anybody's grandchildren, to be part of that kind of an experiment. GMO labeling gives the consumer a choice.
Now, before we took the break and did our cooking demo, we were talking about what the animal research is showing. And Jeff, I think we've got an image there. We talked about infertility, and we have an image here of testes from, I believe it was a rat, is that right? Tell us about that.
Well, in this case, when rats were fed genetically engineered soy, the testicles changed from the normal pink to blue. When mice were fed genetically modified soy, they also had damage to their testes, including damage to the young sperm cells. The female rats had changes in the uterus and ovaries and changes in the way the hormones function. Now, when you look at the offspring, when female rats were fed genetically modified soy, more than half of their babies died within 3 weeks. They were smaller and also sterile, compared to only a 10% death rate among the controls. When hamsters were fed genetically modified soy, by the third generation, most of the animals lost the ability to have babies. They also died at 4 or 5 times the rate, and some had hair growing in their mouths. And when mice were fed genetically modified corn, they too had smaller babies and fewer babies. Now, this is astounding research. But unfortunately, whenever independent researchers discover problems, the biotech industry attacks them. They attack the messenger. They say that the scientist is somehow misled or misaligned, and they try and distort or deny the findings. Now, however, we're finding that of the thousands of doctors who are prescribing non-GMO diets, they're saying that their patients are getting better from the same problems that the lab animals are suffering from that are fed GMOs.
Is that right? Now, Dr. Kelly, what are the human studies showing? Are there human studies out there?
Well, there are some human studies, and Jeff was just mentioning how the physicians, my experience with this is somewhat limited, but what I do know is patients who deal with allergies or some of them seem to have gluten intolerance or other kinds of subtle allergies seem to improve remarkably when they are put on a diet that eliminates these antigens that are associated with genetically engineered food, genetically modified organisms. So, but as Jeff was saying, there's not a lot of research because there's such an antipathy toward this. It's like many of the scientists feel like, well, this is a non-issue. You know, the food is generally recognized as safe. What's the big deal? But these things keep surfacing, and the clinicians are seeing improvements in patients when they take them off of these foods. So it's not going to go away.
That's astounding that the research has not been done, because when you think about, let's say, a pharmaceutical company wants to bring in a drug, you look at how much research they have to do before they can ever get it to clinical trial in human. And those studies need to be so robust, and they're so closely monitored by the FDA.
But the difference is, the way this has been classified, as he said earlier, early on, one of the key decisions, which we now believe was a very wrong decision, was to say that genetically modified foods are equivalent, you know, that are essentially equivalent to a non-genetically modified organism. I mean, really, that's the more we think about that, the more ludicrous that is. That's absolutely not true. But that was the original decision, and based on that, see, then there's no need to do all that rigorous testing.
Right. Now, Jeff, tell us, what has the Obama administration done with genetic modification? If there's been this shift in thinking and the realization that maybe things are not all equal, what's the current administration done with GM?
Well, we were hoping that the Obama administration was going to fulfill the campaign promises of requiring mandatory labeling of genetically engineered foods and rigorous testing. Unfortunately, the person who was in charge of the policy that lied about GMOs and therefore said no testing or labeling was necessary, Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, was put back in the FDA in the Obama administration as the U.S. food safety czar. Tom Vilsack, Iowa's former governor, who was the biotech governor of the year, was put in charge of the USDA. The USDA has approved genetically engineered alfalfa. It has approved genetically engineered sugar beets, and now it looks like the FDA wants to approve genetically engineered salmon, the first genetically engineered animal to be eaten. So, unfortunately, the Obama administration has been consistently ignoring the research, which is now erupting around the world, and the research has been strong enough so that medical organizations, even countries, are rejecting GMOs, saying that they should be put back in the laboratory so that the scientists can spend the decades that are needed in order to find out if these things are safe.
Thank you. Well, and I understand the U.S. is sort of alone in not labeling for GMO. What's the stance in Europe, John?
Well, in Europe, of course, they did pass laws requiring labeling. See, this is what's so interesting to me is that how can you resist, what's wrong with labeling? That's almost sort of crazy to think that we're fighting labeling. We might understand why people would fight the idea that we need to do science. But to label, that's a basic concept. But anyway, in Europe, they did pass the laws requiring labeling, and it has indeed impacted the sales of GMO foods. More and more people are concerned and are wanting to avoid these foods, especially for children. I mean, I think there's actually even more reason during the developmental years to avoid this potential risk. And people want labeling so they can make that choice.
Mm, absolutely. Now, Jeff, I know that you have some major concerns. The research hasn't really been done in humans by the sounds of it. But what would your theoretical concerns be regarding GM foods in humans?
Well, if we look at the two types, the one type is the corn that's engineered to produce its own toxic insecticide. It's called BT toxin. Now, the way it's an insecticide is it breaks open little holes in the cell walls of the gut of the insect and kills them. The biotech industry swore up and down that BT toxin had no impact on human cells, but last year it was reported in a study that it in fact did poke holes in human cells, causing leakage. They also claimed, when they introduced this BT toxin creating corn, that the toxin would be destroyed in the digestive tract in humans once it was eaten. But in Canada, it wasn't destroyed. In fact, it was found in the blood of 93% of the pregnant women tested and 80% of their unborn fetuses. So this means that a toxin that is known to break open the cell walls of human cells is in our digestive tract and in our blood, and with the unborn fetuses, since there's no developed blood-brain barrier, it could even be in their brains. When I speak to physicians' conferences, as I will be doing next week, for example, in a lecture on how GMOs could cause an increase of autoimmune disease and inflammation, when I describe the BT toxin, doctors often say, this might explain why our practice is seeing so many patients with more levels of gastrointestinal distress. If it pokes holes in the walls of the cells and causes leaky gut, that's also linked to autoimmune disease, to allergies, to cancer, to Alzheimer's, even to autism. The other brand or type of genetically modified crops are those that will absorb herbicides like Roundup, and we eat the Roundup. Now, Roundup is linked to the production of massive tumors in animals, cancer, Parkinson's, endocrine disruption. It might be responsible for all those astounding reproductive disorders we discussed earlier. It also makes nutrients unavailable because it binds with nutrients and makes them undigestible. So we're seeing a huge amount of problems in the livestock that are fed these Roundup Ready crops, an almost universal deficiency in certain nutrients, massive abortions or spontaneous abortions, and other problems. In fact, the same problems we saw in the lab animals that are also the ones that are getting better in humans that avoid GMOs, and are the same ones that farmers and veterinarians report are improving in their livestock when they switch from GM soy and corn to non-GM soy and corn. And these are the same disorders and diseases that are on the rise in the U.S. population since GMOs were introduced.
Well, that sounds like very robust evidence. I know it's not double-blinded, placebo-controlled, but it doesn't sound like we will ever get that kind of evidence. But that all fits together very well. Well, we need to go to a break, but coming up next, we'll take a practical look at how GMO is present in your food on your supermarket shelves. But first, let's take a look at today's medical news report. In the headlines today, fast food, asthma and eczema, genetically modified maize and Roundup cause tumours in rats, and energy drinks cause more ER visits. Children who eat fast food could be increasing their risk of developing asthma, eczema and hay fever. In the largest study of allergies in children to date, researchers from Nottingham, England, found that those consuming fast food three or more times a week had a 30% increased risk of severe asthma, hay fever and eczema. There was a protective effect against severe asthma for those who ate fruit at least three times a week. So parents limit the fast food and eat fruit in abundance. Roundup tolerant, genetically modified maize cultivated with or without Roundup and Roundup diluted in drinking water was fed to rats for 2 years to investigate health effects. The sex hormone balance was modified by the GM organism and Roundup treatments. Females developed large mammary tumours earlier and more often than controls. Males had four times more large, palpable tumours than controls, and liver congestion and necrosis was about four times more common. Severe kidney disease was doubled. The French researchers suggested that the hormone-disrupting effects of Roundup and the overexpression of the genetic modification in the maize is likely to explain these findings. As energy drinks have increased in popularity, so have the hospital visits to deal with their acute toxic effects. According to a recent federal health report, the number of ER visits related to the use of energy drinks doubled over the last 4 years, reaching 12,000 visits in 2011. These beverages contain high amounts of caffeine, as much as five times that of a cup of coffee. Included are stimulants which enhance the effects of the caffeine. To date, reports indicate 18 deaths possibly linked to these products. The FDA is planning to review their safety. But let's face it, we don't need the FDA to tell us that caffeine is a drug that has toxic effects. So don't be a drug addict. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's medical news report.
Lord, my God, I called to you for help, and you healed me. You, Lord, brought me up from the realm of the dead. You spared me from going down to the pit. Sing the praises of the Lord, you His faithful people. Praise His holy name. For His anger lasts only a moment, but His favor lasts a lifetime. Weeping may stay for the night, but rejoicing comes in the morning.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Now, I want you to pretend that Dr. Kelly and I are in your local supermarket and we're walking along the shelves. So, Dr. Kelly, what do we have here? Let's start at this end. What do we have here that might contain GM product? I've got kind of a range of things that we'd see on the shelves.
You've got quite a variety. And what's so interesting is that it's in so many places you don't realize until you think about it. But like right here is a container with oil, canola oil, which is generally thought of as a healthy oil because of the
properties of the oil.
Omega-3s and 6 mix. But actually, it's from the canola plant, which is highly genetically modified. And so this is a GM or genetically modified product. A better alternative might be, for example, olive oil.
Right. Get some
healthy oil, but no genetic
extra virgin olive oil. What about these smaller things down the front here?
Okay, what do we have here?
If we have capsules, we often have cornstarch.
That's right.
As a filler in
The filler in there
tablets.
With the supplementation. That's right. It would be cornstarch. So corn is highly genetically modified. Here we have VegiBase. This is a soy product, and I think some of that is soy that's modified and some perhaps not. But so if you're really, here's the thing, we find oftentimes someone who's trying to eliminate genetically modified foods to see if that will improve their condition, you need to go completely away from it. So you have to be more careful.
You're going to have to be careful.
And so here we have some corn baking powder and it has cornstarch in that filler.
Now, you would expect breadcrumbs to just have bread in, wouldn't you?
Wheat, you would think, right?
Wheat, which is safe. surprisingly. They're working on
some modified, but right now you're right. Most of the wheat is not modified.
All right.
But if you read the ingredients of these, you're going to find that it has sweeteners. And so, of course, that could be high fructose corn syrup. That's from corn. Mm-hmm. Or the hydrogenated oil, which would be a soybean oil or corn oil.
This one actually has all four GM modified oils.
Okay.
It's got a 10 out of 10 there. Well, 4 out of 4.
Soybean, cottonseed, canola, and corn. It's really loaded.
So it's loaded. And then it's whey. Tell us about
corn
the milk
meal
products.
Well, whey is, of course, a product from the milk. And it is, we're finding animals fed genetically modified foods. It's changing the content actually of the milk products. So if you really want to avoid completely, you want to go with non-dairy products or products that do not have genetically modified.
Do we need to be concerned about the recombinant growth hormone and the bovine growth hormone as well?
It's a different issue, but it's related. I would agree, yes. You're really wanting to move away from it, you should avoid that also, right?
Mm, okay. Baby food. Now, this is all that baby eats. So...
Yeah.
It's not like us that we might get some foods that have GM.
Right, and this is going to be with the soybean oil, the soy in it.
Okay. Now, I think Jeff has a comment here. Jeff.
The genetically engineered drug originally introduced by Monsanto to increase the production of milk, but it creates a higher level of a hormone in the milk called IGF-1.
Yes.
And that is linked to cancer. That's why the American Nurses Association and American Public Health Association have both strongly urged the rejection of milk from cows treated with bovine growth hormone. In fact, I talked to a former Monsanto scientist who told me that three of his colleagues who were doing safety studies on the milk found so much of this cancer-promoting hormone in the milk, they three Monsanto scientists refused to drink milk thereafter unless it was organic. One bought his own cow.
That sounds like an expensive alternative to me, because where I come from in New Zealand, a good dairy cow would be worth about $2,000. So he was obviously very concerned to have done that. But thank you for that. And I must say, as an OBGYN, IGF-1, I would be concerned about fetal growth being excessive. And I know babies are getting bigger.
That's right.
So we've got milk here.
Milk here, yes.
We've got soy milk, which of course has got soy protein, soybean oil, sugar from the sugar beets, unless it says cane sugar, correct?
That's correct.
Then
the cane sugar is not genetically modified like the sugar beets. Now, one thing I want to say is that you could have a nut milk instead of soy milk.
Right, and we'll talk about the good things soon.
Okay.
Now, chocolate is something that we're really being told, have a piece of chocolate every day, it's good for your health.
Starting to grow with it.
Yes, yes, but what's in the chocolate that we
Well, the first thing we know is it's got sugar in it. And, of course, soy lecithin oftentimes to make it smooth and have that nice stuff. But then also it's got perhaps milk, if it's a milk chocolate, and could have and then of course there's milk fats, so the fat itself is not ideal.
So it's got about 5 hits.
And here's some golden corn meal, yellow corn meal, and that's going to be just the corn itself.
Yes, corn starch,
right?
Yep.
Here's some, looks like some gummy, what are they called, fruit jellies, but here the problem is the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, this is sweetened with
first ingredient
corn. Yeah,
first ingredient beet sugar. Second
beet sugar
ingredient
or high fructose corn.
Corn syrup.
Yeah,
yep, yep.
And then we've got some zucchini here.
Now, Jeff, can we ask you about zucchini? What's the status of zucchini at the moment?
Well, a smaller percentage of the zucchini and yellow crookneck squash are genetically engineered to resist a plant virus. Now, you don't know whether it's GMO because there's no labeling, so you have to buy organic vegetables if you want to be sure, or you have to know the grower and make sure that the seeds that they buy are not genetically engineered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
And then here's sweetener.
Now, aspartame is from a genetically modified organism.
Yes, and plus there's risk from aspartame itself. Even without genetic modification, and then the sugar, the dextrose. So if that's from sugar beets,
now
drinks.
Now this, I'm told sweeteners. I have it on good authority. This is what you serve at every child's birthday party: some punch.
Yes, and so here we're going to find that we have both high fructose corn syrup and the papaya. What is it? Yes, papaya. So that's also been genetically modified. It's mostly from Hawaii
and from China.
Yes.
Yeah. So, as far as you're aware, is it some of the zucchini and the papaya? Those are the
fruits that are non-genetically modified.
But they're the ones we need to be alert to.
And okay. Then here's cornflakes. I mean, that's like an American food, right?
Yes, and that's got corn, it's got sugar from beets, and it's got malt, because malt is also genetically modified.
And then here, what do we have?
We have some chocolate drinking powder, and
we have sugar and soy lecithin.
Well, in just a minute, I'm going to answer some questions that you've sent me during our previous show. But first, let's watch another Ageless Advantage spot.
Is a tomato a vegetable or a fruit? Well, when it comes to preventing ovarian cancer, tomatoes might be the queen of fruit. Women who eat tomatoes more than 5 times per week have a significantly lower risk of ovarian cancer than women who occasionally or never eat them. Women who regularly consumed fruit also had a lower risk, according to the Adventist Health Study. Salsa, anyone? Eating tomatoes at least 5 times a week is another ageless advantage.
Welcome back. If you've missed a previous episode, you want to check one of our recipes, then our website is where to go, hopetv.org/gohealthy. Remember, we've got video podcasts on iTunes as well. Now, if you have a question about GMO for my experts, please call us now. The lines are open, 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And here I have some comments and questions from our Facebook page and from our callers that we have not had a chance to answer before. One caller says, does glucosamine chondroitin help with degenerative arthritis? They're actually two separate compounds. There's glucosamine and chondroitin, and both, and you tend to use them together, so the good point, and they do help with the pain of arthritis. Many people find they can reduce their anti-inflammatory drugs, which can sometimes give those gastrointestinal side effects, but chondroitin, if you're wanting to be vegetarian, you would have to try and find that from a vegetarian source, which is quite rare, and it's more expensive because chondroitin is actually harvested from shark cartilage typically. Anesia posted on Facebook, where could I buy echinacea without gelatin? Anesia, I typically would use tinctures for some of these products, and what tinctures have the advantage of doing is they have a longer shelf life and they are more potent. So go for a tincture. And then Anesia says, should I not take pills with gelatin? Anesia, I think what you're bringing up the thing about gelatin for is that in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, Noah was told to pack the animals onto the ark, to pack 7 clean and 2 of the unclean for every species. So this was a definition or a classification that was established right back at the beginning of the world. He dutifully did that, but we were not told at that point what was clean, what was unclean, until Leviticus 11. And there we get a very fine classification system. And what we find is that in gelatin, we've got hooves, from ground-up hoof material from cows, which are clean, according to Leviticus, but also from pig, which are unclean. And so for some people, they recognize this classification. The reason that God gave this classification was for health reasons, and you'll see that very clearly in the book of Leviticus. And so I would encourage you to consider using this classification when you're deciding which meats or which animal products to use. And you'll notice from question one, that question on chondroitin, which was about shark cartilage, which is an unclean fish. There are clean fish and unclean fish. I want to thank you for sending your questions. Keep them coming. Don't forget to call us now. 855-400-HEALTHY, that's 855-400-4325. Now, how do you choose your veggies at the supermarket? Take a look at this video.
Ever wondered what those numbers are on the stickers of the fruits and vegetables that you buy at the store? Well, they're called price lookup codes, or PLUs for short, and they can actually give you some pretty cool information. PLU codes are designed to help retailers identify produce and manage inventory, but you can use them to distinguish conventional from organic produce, and maybe, just maybe, catch a glimpse of a genetically modified fruit or vegetable. Price lookup codes always have at least 4 digits. For example, 4011 is the code assigned to a standard yellow banana. But when you find the number 9 in front of this 4-digit code, that means that the item is organically grown. So organic bananas are labeled as 94011. If you happen to see the number 8 in front of the 4-digit number, it means that the food is genetically engineered. But you may learn it's tough to find a number 8 food. Why? Because genetically engineered foods are not currently required to be labeled as such in the United States. Producers don't have an incentive to label GE foods since consumers do not pay more for them. And some organizations are concerned that labeling would scare people off unnecessarily, since the Food and Drug Administration says that GE foods are safe. That said, labeling supporters still have concerns that GE foods have not been studied enough with regard to potential human health and environmental impacts. Here's to your happy, healthy, and informed food choices.
Well, that's very informative. That's helpful. But How can consumers actually vote with their feet and make those choices to go non-GMO? What options are left? You know, there were a lot of food and different foodstuffs on that cart. So what's left to eat?
That's right. Sometimes it seems like there's nothing, right? But there's actually a remarkable array, and you have a number here of products right in front of us. I mentioned one, for example, for soy milk. Soy is genetically modified, but there's silk, which is a pure almond nut. So there's nut milks. There's rice milks.
And there's also non-GMO soy milk.
That's true.
Isn't there?
There are. And so as a general rule, as they were saying on that right there, if it's a organically grown, then that generally excludes genetic modified organisms. So that's one. But you have a number of items here. I mean, there's from wheat to almonds. Here's some non-GMO.
So all of the nuts are good, aren't
all
they?
The nuts.
All the nuts.
As far as we know,
talked about
good.
The milk.
Right.
Juices
right.
apart from papaya.
Right. There's orange juice, grapefruit juice. Here's some cereal.
All
that
the
is
cereals
from
apart from
wheat. Right. Barley, oats, all of that is safe and good. You know, there's no genetically modified aspect to that. Here we have dates. What do we have?
So we've got
some
dried fruits.
Five-grain cereal.
Cereals.
And then here's some beans, legumes, healthy, excellent food, by the way.
So apart from soybeans, all the legumes are safe?
That's correct.
Okay, and then we've got all the fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
So it's just the papaya and the zucchini that we'd be concerned
yes,
about.
Yes, and the red corn there is also non-GMO.
Right, so red corn and blue corn are good.
Yeah.
So blue corn chips or red corn chips, you're good to go.
But I want to share with you and your viewers this little nut, and you have the large one there. It's a non-GMO shopping guide. The organization called non-GMOshoppingguide.com.
Right, and I think that's Jeff Smith's, off Jeff Smith's website, which is up on the screen now.
What you can use this to find non-GMO alternatives to whatever it is that you need in your kitchen or for your recipes, and my wife and I have used this and shared it. It's an excellent, and you have the large printable version there. I would recommend that website and that guide. It's very, very helpful.
So this is just downloaded from the web, costs you nothing except just your email address. So that's very handy. Now, Jeff, how widespread is the practice of GM farming? How many acres are we talking about?
We're talking millions and millions of acres. I heard 190 million, but basically, you have to look at only 9 genetically modified food crops. So it's easy to figure out what's GMO and what's non-GMO if you know these 9. Mm-hmm. We've mentioned them: soy, corn, cotton, which is using cottonseed oil, canola, sugar from sugar beets. Those five are the major ones, and the minor ones are zucchini, yellow crookneck squash, and papaya from China or Hawaii. And then there's also alfalfa used for animal feed. Now, I want to mention about nongmoshoppingguide.com. We have the downloaded and booklet version, which lists the brands that have at least some products that have been verified as non-GMO by a third-party organization, Non-GMO Project. But online, you can actually see the specific products that are verified, over 4,000 of them. Or you can download the iPhone application called Shop No GMO, which is absolutely free, Shop No GMO. So you can have that on your phone or iPad as you shop. And again, you can see over 4,000 products that have been verified.
That's
so helpful. I want to applaud you, Jeff, for what you're doing in this arena. To give us an app that we can go shopping with and have that security is very reassuring, because I think as you become informed about this, it can be rather overwhelming, a little bit frightening. And so these are great tools that you've created for us to go out and shop safely, so to speak. So thank you. Now, John, how does the genetic engineering of a crop impact the environment in which it's growing?
Yeah, this is a very interesting area of because these plants, many of them are pollinated, you know, so the air is full of the pollen and it spreads, and that, and this is how the next generation of crops comes about, right? But there have been examples that's clearly shown that the pollen, which is carrying this genetic modification, is passed then to, can be passed to a neighboring field or neighboring crops. And actually, there's some, we don't have time to go into it, but there's some very interesting cases. One I'm thinking of in Canada, where someone was actually, found guilty of raising a crop that was genetically modified that the individual said it did not intend, but it was perhaps pollinated from a neighboring genetically modified crop. So this is concerning. There's no containment for these modifications, as far as we know. Now, one thing I will mention along that line is they've talked about a terminator gene. They're developing terminator seeds that do not reproduce, but that doesn't keep the plant from still passing these modifications in the pollen. So there's no real containment that I know of. I don't know if maybe Jeffrey Smith may have some more information or not.
Right. Jeff, can I ask you, what do these crops do to the soil, to the organisms in the soil, to the worms, to just that environment, as well as, of course, the cross-pollination problems?
It's a disaster, actually. It's an absolute disaster. The herbicide-tolerant crops have resulted in an increase in the use of herbicide by about 527 million pounds over 16 years. The herbicide kills the beneficial bacteria in the soil. It promotes pathogens in the soil, which have resulted in the increase of more than 40 plant diseases. The Roundup can remain in the soil for decades, and it can cause problems with subsequent health of plants grown after it has been applied. The BT toxin is produced in the roots of the corn plant. It binds with clay and can remain active. It can be washed into the rivers and streams and affect the ecosystem of the marine life. And so we have a system now where we're affecting millions and millions of acres negatively, and it affects it for years and years and years. And as John mentioned, there's also a self-propagating genetic pollution of the gene pool, and we have no technology to fully clean up the disaster that we've been creating through GMOs.
Now tell me, Jeff, burning question, why would a seed company do this? I thought they would want the soil to work for them.
Well, the seed companies patent these genetically engineered crops, and then they require the farmers not to replant the seeds that are grown, but to go back every year and buy new seeds. In fact, they have sued hundreds of farmers for millions of dollars because they believe that those farmers have saved the seeds, which is a practice that farmers have done for thousands of years. So actually, the major biotech companies like Monsanto, they're the largest seed company in the world because they went on a buying spree, buying up these seed companies, and then oftentimes remove the non-GMO seeds from their catalogs when the GMO seeds are available.
So removing the choice. Well, I want to thank you. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, Jeff. It's been so enlightening. And Dr. Kelly, it's great to have you back again.
Thank you.
If the evidence you've seen today concerns you, you can and should do something about it. Every time you put something in your mouth, every time you go shopping, you need to exercise free choice. The deceptions can only continue if you continue to put money into the pockets of the GM industry giants. So, avoid processed foods as much as possible. That way you can avoid those 9 ingredients. Buy organic wherever you can, especially soy, corn, canola oil, and those 9 things. When the legislative actions are made in this arena, let your leaders know your opinions. Go onto the responsibletechnology.org website. Stay informed. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. We'll see you next time.